You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Thord,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is... Authors, I have a fantastic new service to tell you about. It's called PubSite. PubSite is a service to help you build your very own website, your home on the web, where you can promote your work and give your fans a place to connect with you. PubSite is a website platform that allows every author, regardless of budget, to have a great-looking professional website. Developed by the book marketing professionals at FSB Associates, PubSite is the new easy-to-use DIY website builder developed specifically for books and authors. Whether you're an author of one book or 20, or a small publisher, PubSite allows you to build, design, and most importantly, update your website pain-free. No need to be dependent on a designer or webmaster to make a small but costly change to your website. Save the money and do it yourself. PubSite is the best platform for authors because it's a book-centric platform. PubSite was built just for authors and small publishers. Every design, feature, and layout is book-centric. They have customized designs for you to use. It's easy to build. No coding or HTML is necessary to create a stunning, professional-looking website with all the features you want. Get a custom domain name, yourname.com. It's simple to update. You can add all of your books, add a blog and a book tour, sell from any retailer, manage your email list and social media, and even do e-commerce. Build your website with a 14-day free trial, then pay just $19.99 per month, which includes hosting. And we offer packages starting at $499 to set up the website for you. Pub-site.com, the place to help authors find their home on the web. Beware the Chinaman by Stephen Taylor. The future is electric, but who holds the power? Sent by government agent Howard to pick up a stolen hard drive, Danny soon finds himself fighting for his life as he's chased across Europe by the mysterious and deadly Chinaman. The hard drive holds information to expose an organization called the Board, and its chairman wants it back. The Board's plan is to save the planet and gain global dominance through its ecological empire. The execution of the plan is by any means necessary. Beware the Chinaman, the new thriller by Stephen Taylor. Unleashing Iron, Book 3 of the Unwilling Souls series by Gregory D. Little, arrives April 24th and is available for pre-order now. Cess Lucani has one mission: keep humankind's murderous gods imprisoned. She's about to fail. The gods have achieved the unthinkable, inhabiting human avatars from within their prison's walls. They now gather followers and work to break it open from the outside. One of those avatars is Cess's own father. Just as all seems lost, Cess learns of a recently unearthed artifact so powerful that it can repair the prison and save her father from the possession that is killing him. But in the wrong hands, the artifact could demolish the prison instead of repairing it, and it's already been stolen. In a desperate race to control the object that will save or end the world, Cess faces a devastating choice as she realizes that no one is immune to the artifact's ancient promise of forgotten power. Not her family, not her friends, not even herself. Unleashing Iron is available for pre-order now. Order before April 24th to get the special sale price.
Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I'm really excited to have Joy Cho on the show with me today. Joy is a designer, creative person, just... And she's a person that teaches other people how to be creative and how to bring joy into their lives, no pun intended. And she's also a new children's book author with some amazing stories and some great things to bring to that audience. Welcome to the show, Joy.
Hi, Hank. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad to have you here, Joy. We begin each show with the same question, and that question is, what is your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller?
Oh, I think that from a very early age, I was always a very creative kid. I made stuff. I was a crafter. I liked to plant plants and grow them. I liked to bake things. I liked to make cards for people. And so for me, although my creative storytelling was very visual early on, it was kind of the beginning of the evolution to now eventually actually physically writing. I didn't start my career or my journey as an official writer, but I've since now written 6 books, 3 of them being the kids' books that we're talking about. And so to be able to sort of take the creative mindset and the ability to tell a story visually and translate that into words has sort of been the evolution over time, over my career. So I know that doesn't answer your question exactly pinpointed to like one specific instance, but I really think that at an early age, probably 11, 12, something like that, is when I really got into sharing stories with people and wanting to share stories in some way.
I think that's a perfect answer. You know, because, and I, the question began when we started the podcast 900 episodes ago, with, you know, what's your first memory of wanting to be a writer? And then I quickly realized that storytelling comes in all sorts of forms, and, everyone's journey is not exactly the same. But I love that, the way you described it. Were you always a visual person? Can you remember a time when you didn't want to make things and want to take the pictures from your head and try to represent them in the world?
No, I really can't remember a time because I was doing it since I was little.
Do you come from a very creative family? Was this something that handed down from parents, or can you, you know, what was the atmosphere like that you grew up in?
Well, my parents are immigrants from Thailand, and I was born in the States, but they came here with no money and started their own business. They started a Thai restaurant in the Philadelphia area. And so for me, they weren't necessarily making stuff art-wise. I mean, my mom loves art. She does that on the side. But as their jobs, they weren't doing that. But I think the creation of food, of recipes, of entrepreneurship that I saw starting when I was 5 probably lended itself to creativity as well. I also spent a lot of time at my parents' restaurant. You know, my parents didn't always have childcare for me in addition to being, you know, they couldn't afford childcare on top of having to work. And so I would hang out with them in the restaurant and I would fold napkins and I would do my homework and I would have to figure out ways to be creative. And I think that kind of time of solitude, of having to figure out how to have fun in a restaurant where you don't have a screen, you don't have all the social media stuff that kids have these days, you don't have a lot of resources, that actually fosters creativity a ton, which also surprisingly I feel like is happening right now with our current situation where kids are home more. They're not necessarily having all these different outside resources at their disposal. And so I think it's going to be, you know, one of the positive sides is that people are going to come out of this a lot more creative and resourceful than they were before.
For a lot of families, food is a centerpiece of, it's a place where we bond, you know, over a meal, over cooking. There's a lot of families that, you know, hand down recipes and ways of doing things, and a lot of important stuff happens in the family kitchen. I grew up and live in the South, and you know, food is definitely a part of our culture and a part of our traditions. A lot of things happen in the kitchen and around the dining room table. Growing up in a family that owned a restaurant, do you feel like that that food had that sort of familial connection? Like even though that you owned a restaurant, you worked and you fed lots of people, were there family secrets and traditions that were passed on in your family kitchen at home?
Growing up in a restaurant family, it's a little bit different in the sense that, at least in my restaurant family, is that my parents' restaurant was the kitchen. So we didn't necessarily have that same atmosphere going on at home, because my parents or whoever was cooking would cook there, and my parents would bring home these fresh homemade Thai meals for us to eat at home. Or I would be at the restaurant getting to try stuff, getting to sample stuff, and being able to have those home-cooked meals, quote-unquote home-cooked meals from a restaurant at the restaurant. So I didn't necessarily tie those memories to my home specifically, but I tied it to my home away from home, which was my parents' restaurant. And so the memories are a lot more of just that evolution, and also the community of the restaurant, not only the chefs and the people who work there that I sort of grew up with also, but also customers who have been customers of my parents for, some 30 years at this point, to be able to see them evolve and them see me and my brother grow up and all of that. So it just became this different community sort of atmosphere that is similar to what you're talking about, but just in another physical place.
Sure. Joy, at what point in your life did you realize that this thing that you like to do in shaping your world around you and making gifts for people and taking these things that you could see in your head that the rest of the world didn't see and bringing them to fruition, when did you realize that you could make a job of that?
I think that when I was a teenager and I knew that I loved making things, I hoped I could make a job of it, but I also excelled at academics and I did pretty well in school. So my grades would have probably pointed me in another direction. And my parents, I think, also being immigrants and not necessarily knowing that there could be creative jobs that you could actually make money at, it was hard for them to think about me being an artist or something like that and not something more traditional. So I really struggled with the idea of how do I become a creative person but make my parents feel okay with my future and that I could sustain it. And so I ended up deciding to go to a school that had a great design program, but that had other things as well, just in case I changed my mind. And so I think that it was sort of in that transition of deciding where to go to college and then going to school, but really, probably until I got my first job, I didn't really know that I could have a job in it, because people tell you, but it's hard to know that it actually turns into something until you're there. I think now is different. I grew up in a time where there was barely even email and there was no social media when I was that age. And so now I think that kids have the ability to see so many different jobs that exist, and they have the ability to see jobs that you just make up or that you can create on your own, which is amazing. And I think that the world being your oyster feels so much more true now in our modern age, because you can see people doing that, whereas back then I kind of had no idea. So I think the opportunities are pretty endless for a creative kid these days.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have a design philosophy that you work by, live by? Is there something in your mind that you feel like you can offer to people that just helps their everyday life in ways that they couldn't imagine before meeting and working with you?
I think if you are working on something, whether it's you're putting together, you're trying to redecorate your living room, or maybe you're getting dressed for the day in an outfit that you want to feel excited about, or whether you are wrapping a gift for somebody that somebody's birthday, it's just about, does that make you happy. I mean, I think that's what it comes down to. It sounds pretty simple, but for me, what makes me happy visually are lots of colors. I love using patterns. I love also when there's something sort of unexpected or slightly off kilter. And those are qualities that I sort of inject into my work, my design work, or when we're taking photos of things to put on social media, whatever that might be. And so I would just apply that same thing. In general, certain things make me happy, but what makes you happy? And as long as you're following that and you're bringing that to your everyday, I think that will make it more enjoyable. And that's when you know if something is right for you.
Joy, we touched on this a second ago, about the, you know, the times that we're living in right now, and we're, you know, all under this global pandemic, and we find ourselves in situations that we've never found ourselves in before. And, you know, a lot of us, you know, are thinking of ways to simplify our lives and to, get by with less. And there's this kind of mentality that people are hunkered down. And how important is it now in these times to not lose sight of things that bring joy and happiness to our life? Like how important is design in a time like this?
I mean, I think it's more important now than ever. I mean, not necessarily having to get so complicated or intense within design, but more just appreciating what exists and appreciating what surrounds you, and also simple ways that you can make your surroundings more enjoyable, because we're all home. We can't go to any place super grand right now, and we can't go shopping in stores and different things like that, but we have our homes. We have our safe homes that we're in, and we're all grateful to be there. And so I think not only appreciating it, but if there are ways that will make you happier at home, do that. I mean, it doesn't have to be things that cost a lot of money. Is it about putting those photos on the wall that have been sitting in the corner and actually finishing up that project you've been doing? Is it about just a fresh coat of paint? Is it about relaying out your living room? Is it about organizing your closet? I mean, there's simple things that, and I don't want to say this is our time to do our procrastination list, not necessarily, but if those things make us happy and are going to make us feel happier being at home for however long we need to be at home, then those are the things that we can focus a little bit of time on, just to bring that joy to our day.
Over the last decade or decade and a half or so, you have built a brand around your sense of design, the Oh Joy brand. Tell me about how that began, and how do you pick things to branch out into to bring your brand to different facets of our life.
When I started my company 15 years ago, it was a graphic design studio where I was designing packaging and branding and websites for other clients. And then at the same time, I started a blog, which back then there was no social media. So it was really just for fun. And so as that blog grew and was bringing me more clients, and it was serving as a marketing tool, and it continued to grow, in which I was able to stop doing client work and focus on designing things under my own name, we've always continued to evolve. And I say we because it started off as me, but then I've slowly had employees join me as we've gotten bigger, and freelancers and different things like that. And so basically while design is at the core and it's always been the basis of it, and I that's my skill, my innate skill, I've always grown and pivoted as it's made sense. So for example, I used to design things for other people, and then once my brand was at a place where people knew us enough that I could design my own stuff, I was able to expand into designing collections for Target and collections for Band-Aid and collections for people and pets and babies and homes and apparel and all different types of things. And none of this stuff happened overnight, but it really happened over time. And the same thing with these kids' books. It's sort of as you grow, as you get older, as your life changes, the things that you want to work on change a little bit too. And so being now a parent of two kids, kids' products also resonate with me as well. So I've been trying to add those in as Ojoy has evolved, in addition to continuing to add things for my core audience, which are female adults.
Gotcha. You mentioned that, you know, as your personal interests change and evolve and grow, then you have branched out to inform those things. The three books that we're talking about, the first one, Be Curious, and Oh Joy Story is out everywhere now. And there's two more coming. You're Okay and Oh So Kind. We'll follow that up. Why choose to write children's books?
Well, I think that with my overall purpose to bring joy to the everyday, I feel there's lots of ways I've been doing that for adults, and to be able to bring that into these adults' lives for now their kids and for their families, it felt like that step of that natural evolution. And so for me, as a mother of two kids, and to watch them grow and to see how they pick up on the things that we teach them, but also the things that they're learning on their own, either in school, from teachers, from friends, these books are all about the qualities I think are so important to instill in them. So the first one, Be Curious, is all about curiosity. And then the second one is all about compassion and feelings. And then the third one, Oh So Kind, is all about kindness. And so those are qualities that I think we can all agree are important, but to be able to introduce them at a very young age, these books are meant for ages 0 to 3. They're board books. But then also early readers who are in the 4, 5, 6 range can also be reading them as they learn how to read themselves. And they're just things that incite those qualities for them to take into their childhood and into their adulthood.
This audience that you're writing for is one of the toughest audiences, I'll tell you. My wife and I have 5 kids of our own, so we, you know, as our kids were younger, we went through lots and lots of books, you know, early on, and then, you know, as they progressed as readers. But, you know, this audience, they can be fickle, and, you know, they can spot when an adult thinks they're being clever, and, you know, and their adult friends say, oh, you know, look at you, how cute. And then the kid looks at it and just, you know, pitches it across the room and goes on to the next new shiny thing. Did this audience intimidate you at all?
A little bit. I mean, I've written 3 books prior. 2 of them were business books, so it's a lot of text.
Yeah.
And it's towards adults. And then another one was DIY, so that one is a little bit more photo focused. But to write for kids was definitely a new thing for me. I mean, I've read, as I imagine you have, millions, I feel like, of children's books over my 8+ years as a parent. But when you get to writing it yourself, all of a sudden, I remember my very first round of what I wanted to say, it's still sort of in that book, but it is so different than what came out at the very end, because I think I was a little bit more, I was just used to writing a little bit more factually, a little bit more for adults. And for kids, you have to be a little bit more, especially for little kids, you have to be a little bit more sing-songy. You have to remember words that they can grasp, and they can't be too intense, but you also don't have to do, you know, only 3-letter words. And so it's that balance of words that it's okay for them to hear at a young age, even if they can't read it, but also words that they can start to remember and they can start to say back. And, you know, luckily I had my own mini focus group. I had my children and also our illustrator, Angie Stalker. She has 3 children. And so we made sure to bring home printouts to our kids to not only look at the words, but also look at the illustrations. And our kids range, you know, at that time, it was 2 years ago we started working on this. They were from very little up until elementary school age. And so it was good to just get that feedback. I mean, because I think if we didn't have any children at all read it, it would be a much different situation. So we went through lots of rounds, me with the writing and also Angie with illustrations, and us sort of going through the process of what that was going to look like and feel like and how it was all going to come together.
As a designer and an illustrator yourself, what was it like working with an illustrator on these stories to, and what was that collaboration like for, you know, depending on someone to visually represent what you're saying and maybe add something to the storytelling through an image that maybe you couldn't or chose to not highlight in the text because the graphic would do that for you? Like, what is that decision process like?
Well, Angie, luckily, it was easy to work with her because she has been with me for almost 7 years. And so nice. She was my designer for a lot of our Ojoy products. So in terms of our working relationship, it wasn't new. And I think that helped a lot because I know some authors work with an illustrator for one time and it's their first time working together and there's a little bit of a learning curve there. So we didn't have that, but drawing children's characters was new for us because previously all of the artwork that we've done together has been patterns and prints for products. It hasn't necessarily been these characters. And so we had to develop this from scratch. And so together we worked pretty closely. Like I gave her an idea of what I was thinking and what type of style I was thinking, but obviously every illustrator has their own abilities. And so she sort of worked through a few different options that she thought that she could really flesh out. And then we would go back and forth until I chose sort of like this one direction, this one feel, a certain level of hand in the drawing, as well as a certain level of coloring and coloration and how detailed or not detailed different things would be. And so we got sort of what I would say like a style guide for how the scenes and the characters would be drawn. So pretty much I always started with writing for all three books. I wrote the word first, went through multiple phases of them, and then I would tell her the scenes that I imagined for each of those spreads. And then when she drew them out, you know, sometimes we had to evolve the scene a little bit differently based on how the words worked, or sometimes I would switch the words a little bit based on how the scene was working out. And so it was a lot, you know, it was a lot of back and forth once both of those things were established. But it's, you know, it's a labor of love. It took a couple years from the time we started this, the first book coming out. And so it's always so fascinating. I think people don't realize how long books take, even a kid's book that right. doesn't really have a lot of words. It takes some time.
For sure. You branded these books like Be Curious and Oh Joy Story. Just looking at them visually, I can kind of pick up on your Oh Joy brand of your design language, if you will. There's kind of funky patterns and some color combinations and choices that remind me of a lot of your other products that you've designed and you know, under your Oh Joy brand. Was that important to you to have that common design language, maybe is the right term, that this, when you pick this up, that the reader, the adult who buys the book, maybe can make that connection with you, and there's a certain level of trust that's built in because they trust you with other things. Therefore, you know, why wouldn't they trust you with this book for their children?
Absolutely. I mean, the Oh Joy audience are mostly female, ages 24 to 45, and so some of them are parents and some of them are not parents. But for those who are parents, who we think will buy the book or who have already bought the book, there's lots of little nuggets in there that if you're an Oh Joy fan, you will see. And, you know, you picked it out exactly, like the colors, the usage of pattern. You know, example, in Be Curious, there's a whole party scene, and parties and celebrations are very important to us. It sort of symbolizes celebrating the everyday. And then there'll be things where you'll see different products in there that are actually past Oh Joy products. You know, we've had collections at Target, and we've had different items that we have been bestsellers and have sold out. And so if you see a picture, or you see a party hat, or you see some decorative party things, a lot of times they're drawn and illustrated after some actual real products that we used to sell because people miss those. And we get emails all the time asking if we have them again, and they've been long sold out. But to be able to kind of draw them into the books in a subtle way has been really fun, too.
I love it. The first book, Be Curious, an Oh Joy Story, is out everywhere now. There's links to it in the show notes of this episode. Joy, we talked about the next two books, You're Okay and Oh So Kind. When are those gonna hit the market?
So You're Okay will come out in August, and then Oh So Kind will come out in December. So by the end of the year, all three will be out, and there'll be a nice thing that if you haven't gotten the first two, you can get them all and bundle them together, and been great gifts. I love seeing people put Be Curious in their kids' Easter baskets this past weekend, and kids have been sharing, parents have been sharing their kids reading it on social media and tagging me, so I've loved that. It brings me so much joy.
I love it. Joy, this has been so much fun talking. If people are just discovering you, where can they find you online to connect with you and dig into all the great stuff you do?
You can find everything, including where to buy the books, at ohjoy.com, and that also links to all of my social media as well.
Excellent. We'll put links to everything you do in the show notes this episode. Joy Cho, thank you so much for taking time to come on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Before We Ever Spoke, by Dan Largent. Cleveland, Ohio, 2006. After a chance encounter, three people soon find out that life can sometimes thrust us into the public eye, even when taking great measures to avoid it. Cooper Madison was the best pitcher in baseball after being drafted number one overall in 1996 from the small Gulf Coast town of Pass Christian, Mississippi. One year after announcing his sudden and shocking retirement, he finds himself seeking anonymity in Cleveland, Ohio. Kara Knox is the youngest sibling to three older brothers. After a tragic work accident to her closest relative, she has built up a tough exterior as she begins her final year of college at Cleveland State University. Jason Knox, Kara's oldest brother, is the lead detective on Cleveland's Edgewater Park killer case. After months without a suspect, he's feeling the heat from his media-hungry chief. Serendipity intervenes, and all three learn that perception and reality are paths that rarely ever intersect. Before We Ever Spoke, by Dan Largent. Hey folks, you really ought to check out Patricia Gillum's Heroes of Corvus series. Book one is called A Superhero's Duty, a fight between a second-generation superhero named Red Bolt and a villain for hire named Icarus goes terribly wrong, resulting in the drowning deaths of three innocent civilians and orphaning a six-year-old boy. Racked with guilt, Red Bolt visits Cameron Wilson at the hospital every night and won't leave the boy's side until he falls asleep. Befriended by a night shift nurse, the man in costume begins to disclose what really happened after the fight and why he feels the death of Cameron's parents and sister fall on his actions. A superhero didn't survive that night, and Cameron and the rest of the city are not out of danger. A Superhero's Duty, Book 1 of the Heroes of Corvus by Patricia Gillum. Get this series now.